You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Yes, MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition. I'm Dave Raymond. What a fun week it was as the Brewers visit the Football Hall of Fame and try to figure out their outfield. We talk grilled cheese with Kerry Muscat while she's in San Francisco with the Cubs. The Reds trying to finish strong and build some momentum into the coming years. The Cardinals, it's all about Adam Wainwright. And don't forget the Pirates closing the gap quickly on the top record in Major League Baseball. That and just a little bit more. National League Central Edition, MLB.com Extras. Where do we start with this one this week? How about the fact that this team is now, you know, right in the middle of this 10-game roadie, and those are always tough this time of year, any time of year, really. But they started it with 3 in San Diego, where the winning team scored 8, 9, and 10 runs in the three different games. And I was always under the impression that that was a difficult ballpark in which to score. I know they moved the fences in recent years. They've made some adjustments. But come on. How are we averaging 9 runs a game for the winning team in a series in San Diego?
That's a great question, too, especially when you consider that, you know, when it came against the Cardinals, this is against the pitching staff, the best pitching staff in baseball. You know, this is a team that has really had an earned run average right around 260, 270 all year. And then on the flip side, when it was the Cardinals who broke out, this is an offense that has been struggling to score runs for most of the season. So, yeah, we're not used to seeing a lot of high-scoring games on either side, anybody who's watched the Cardinals all year. It's an odd way to start the road trip. I think it's also interesting that you look at San Diego. Right now is the only National League team that has a winning record against the Cardinals this season. So who would have thunk it? It'd be the Padres giving the Cardinals a harder time than anybody else.
Isn't that weird? Although, let's face it, you know, the Padres are one of the darlings coming into the season, right? I mean, that was one of the teams everybody's, we're excited about the Padres. That one didn't work out, but maybe the Cardinals were buying into it a little bit. Moving on, now in Arizona for what will seem like an eternity. I don't know if you and I have had this conversation or not, but sometimes it's not, you know, who you play but when you play them sort of thing. Diamondbacks right now, maybe not a team anybody's real excited about facing.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the standings in the NL West. I mean, you look at the Dodgers skid here recently, and the Diamondbacks, there's no reason why they can't get themselves back into that race, or what maybe they already have. So it is. It's an interesting time to go to Arizona. They're playing well. Again, all they have to do is look at the standings and think, you know, one good week, and we're really in this thing, especially if the Dodgers can lose. The Giants have not had the best week after their trips to St. Louis and Pittsburgh. So, yeah, it is an interesting time to catch Arizona. It also comes for the Cardinals, again, in this very long road trip, their longest road trip of the season in terms of games played. They lose a series in San Diego. They have this one in Arizona, and then they have a trip to San Francisco looming. So definitely a grind, and it's going to be interesting to see, too, you know, as the Pirates are breathing even closer to down the Cardinals' backs, how this series in Arizona goes. So, yeah, definitely a tough time to catch the Diamondbacks team.
Last week, we kind of jumped in on this Adam Wainwright idea. Hey, maybe he would come back and pitch a little bit. It was one of those things you would just sort of stumble into. We talked about it a little bit more, and now the concept seems to have really grown. Where is Adam Wainwright right now?
He is still throwing, and, you know, his perspective is that he believes he's going to pitch this year. I'll throw that out first, but he also just wants to make the decision on the Cardinals end as tough as be. So if you know, if it comes down to it and they decide not to pitch him, he wants that decision to be as difficult as he can make it. So, you know, we watched this last homestand when the team was at home. He was throwing about every other day on flat ground. He's going to continue to do that. He's going to continue to increase the distance of which he does that. And then you're looking at September, and he thinks he's going to be on the mound in September. So, you know, right now he's pushing it as much as he can push. Now, again, this is an injury that you have to be smart about, and you can only kind of go so as far as the doctors can go. You know, the interesting thing about this injury is obviously it has nothing to do with his arm. So he is, you know, as much as his Achilles and his leg will allow him to throw, he's going to continue to build up that arm strength. But now, certainly, we're not going to see him pitch in September. And if we do see him pitch, it probably wouldn't be until late October, and it would almost certainly be in a relief role just because he wouldn't have the time to build back up for a starter's load. But just the fact that he has his eye on getting on the mound next month, he continues hard in rehab. He's working out about 5 hours a day to try to get himself back to the season. You know, it's admirable, and trust me, the players in this clubhouse notice what he's doing and are very excited about the possibility of potentially getting him back in October. So, I don't know. The Cardinals still aren't willing to say much. You know, General Manager John Mozeliak especially isn't willing to say much about the chances of Wainwright pitching this year, and certainly there's, you know, the needed doctor signing off on all of this. But if you ask Adam Wainwright, he is adamant he is going to be throwing another meaningful pitch before the season is over.
The Pirates, in the last week, believe it or not, have managed to carve into that lead of the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, it wasn't that long ago, August 12th, when the Cardinals had a seven-game bulge in the division. It's now 3.5 games, and it's kind of funny, Tom, but I mean, this team, I don't want to say they're getting hot. They have been ridiculously hot for a long time. But the Cardinals might finally be showing just a little bit of wear and tear, and we could be on the cusp of seeing a little bit of shift in that dynamic in this division.
Well, it's a definite race. As you said, 3.5, but as we speak, 3 games in the loss column. St. Louis is in the midst of a challenging road trip. They just lost 2 out of 3 in San Diego and also have to play through Arizona and the Giants. Arizona is playing very good ball. They just had a 4-game sweep of Cincinnati, not one of the better teams in the division, but still 4-game sweep on the road. So they're definitely somebody to contend with. And the Pirates have a relatively, because they just gone through a really difficult stretch, have a relatively easier part of their schedule with 4 games against Miami. So, we already have a legitimate race, obviously, 3.5 games. And it might get even tighter. And the scenario for Pittsburgh's return to St. Louis in a couple of weeks certainly is enticing.
Yeah, September 4th, 5th, and 6th, the holiday weekend. Man alive, there'll be a lot of eyes on those games. But it is also stretching. You know, we talked about what the Cardinals have ahead of them. For the Pirates, though, the teams don't, frighten you in quite the same way. You're still talking about the Pirates going onto the road now for 13 of their next 16 games. And this time of year, that can be a trouble spot for a lot of teams. The good news, I guess, from the Pirates' standpoint is they played better than .500 on the road this year.
Yes, they have. But that stretch of away games that we're talking about does take them back into National League Central territory, which has been a challenge all season. 7-17 as you speak, which is remarkable. I mean, we're almost in September, and they've won only 7 games on the road in division cities. So obviously that's something that will have to be corrected. But overall, considering they actually got off to a poor start on the road, the first 3 trips were losing road trips, and they've got that over .500. And right now, like you said, the teams don't frighten you the same way for the simple reason that the Cardinals, they're still the fundamental champs in this division. They play good, sound baseball. And the Pirates keep coming up with mistakes that so far they managed to overcome. I don't know how long you can keep that dynamic going. I know Hurdle isn't happy about it. But, they'll have to play a lot of cleaner ball to sustain the success on this, portion of the schedule coming up.
Kind of on a little side note, you had a piece not long ago, I think it was leading into that Giants series, pointing out the Pirates' record against National League West teams, which almost doesn't seem possible. They were, 17-3 against the West going into that series?
16-3, so they came out of it 19-4. Which, those numbers by themselves are pretty astonishing. But when you take into consideration the historic difficulty this team has had playing, on the West Coast against West teams, it's even more incredible. And it's on a record pace. I mean, it's not one of those official records, but the record for best interdivisional play since the 3-division format came into being is like 800 and five, the winning percentage by the 2002 Yankees against the American League Central, and the Pirates are playing at a level way above that now.
And the Cubs out in San Francisco, the city by the bay, a wonderful city for about 100 reasons, but Kerry, it is a great eating city. What do you do? What do you look for in San Francisco?
As soon as I got here, I walked down to the Embarcadero so that I could find an oyster restaurant that I like. And then there's also, I usually go down to the wharf and try and avoid the tourists, but I will have the chowder and the bread bowl.
Yeah.
I like to do that. At least I do like to do that. I know it's touristy, but it's really good. And then there's some Italian places, and I don't know the neighborhood. I just kind of know how to get there. But and then I'm trying to find, there's a grilled cheese place that I like that specializes just in grilled cheese sandwiches, which, of course, is the perfect restaurant, and tons of breakfast places. So it's pretty much the perfect city. The good thing is that you have to walk, because after eating all that stuff, then you walk it off. So.
Yeah.
Boy, and speaking of walk-offs, yeah, I made an easy transition for you.
No, I want to stay on the grilled cheese sandwiches. Sourdough. What makes the grilled cheese sandwiches at this particular place so good?
It's just different kinds of cheese, different combinations. I've only eaten there once. Usually when I'm walking past it, sometimes I forget, because a lot of times I'll go over to Chinatown and I'll do dim sum. A lot of times when I was walking past, but today I'm targeting it, and I will have to report back later.
I love it. All right. Well, there's nothing better than San Francisco in the middle of the summer. Get out of the heat. Although this is a Cubs team that might not want to leave the friendly confines, as they've always been known and certainly are this year. This team is on a run right now, Kerry, that is just ridiculous. What, 20 of 24 that they have won, and the numbers, in a stretch like that, you would imagine would be rather disparate, runs they've scored versus given up. Can you remember a run quite like this for this length of time for a Cubs team?
Well, no, and the Cubs PR people even pointed out that it's the first time they've won 20 of 24 in a single season since 1945. So I was not alive then, although some people might think I was. But you have to go way back to have a string of success like this.
Yeah, and they've done it in so many different ways. And you referenced the walk-offs recently. What is it, 12 walk-offs now for this team?
Right, 12. Right, Bryant. They beat the Indians on Monday with Bryant hitting his second career walk-off. Of course, this is only Bryant's first season, but it's. He hit a home run with two outs in the ninth, and very impressive opposite field shot. So that was good. But no, they're winning in exciting ways. Sunday's game, I'm not sure it was just as if somebody was throwing underhand to them. No offense to the Braves, but it just seemed like they were hitting everything. So, but it's been a lot of fun at Wrigley.
Oh man, I can only imagine. And I mean, we're talking about the fourth best record in all of baseball. Now they're still third in their division, and that's it is what it is. Although the Cardinals are now heading into a very treacherous stretch, but this is kind of an interesting stretch now for the Cubs too, right? I mean, they spent a lot of time at home recently, and now this trip in and of itself, while not a long one. Fairly challenging one. 3 in San Francisco, 3 in L.A.
Right, and it's going to be a little tricky, also because they are shorthanded. Jorge Soler is going to be out for a month because of an oblique strain, and they also lost Jason Mott, who had 8 wins out of the bullpen because of a strained shoulder. So that's. As much as some fans weren't too happy with Mott being a little inconsistent, he's been pretty consistent of late. And to lose a guy who's picked up that many wins and who's got that kind of experience may have an effect. I think knowing Madden, he'll just sort of readjust some of the roles down there, and someone else would have to pick it up. There's a guy who's kind of silently emerging in the bullpen as being sort of a secret weapon, and that's Clayton Richard, a left-hander who's really thriving in that role, and hopefully he can fill in the blanks too. Fill in the gap, I think, is a better word. Sorry.
Adam, the team on a little bit of a roadie. They're in D.C. I saw that a group of the ball club, anyway, had some time to sneak over to Canton, Ohio, go to the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Were you in that group? Did you get any part of this exciting off-day adventure?
Well, I stayed in Washington, D.C. instead and did a tour of the museum to celebrate our country's greatest resource, our journalists. But, no, the team, they flew out after that game on Sunday, and they had a behind-the-scenes tour on Monday of Canton. It looked really cool. Logan Schaefer was one of the players who went, and a bunch of the medical staff and front office people. Obviously, there's much Packers paraphernalia, being the greatest franchise in NFL history. So I think that it looked like a good time was had by all.
You're on fire today, Adam. But forget that Canton, Ohio stuff. The museum is awesome. I went there probably about 5 years ago. What did you think?
It's really great. I thought my favorite part of it was just the hall where they had sort of the history of news and newspapers going all the way back to printed pamphlets and, you know, really every major world event you can think of. They had a newspaper there. It was cool to see the original Dewey Defeats Truman. Newspaper, coverage of Pearl Harbor, everything you can think. It was definitely worthwhile. There's a baseball exhibit going on now, which was kind of neat, too, the history of the Washington Nationals and the coverage that they've had. Very, very – and then, of course, I think the thing that most people – what stands out to them is there's a section about 9/11, which is incredibly powerful with front pages – from around the world after that day, and part of the spire that sat on top of one of the towers. It was an incredibly powerful exhibit as well, so definitely worthwhile. I was joking about our greatest resources, our journalists, but it was really interesting just to kind of see the history of media, and it's a unique thing to visit in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great historical artifacts and museums and everything in that city, but I'll echo your sentiments. I love the museum. I think it's a fabulous, fabulous facility and exhibit. But let's move on. Talking about history and those types of things. I remember the days of Mike Fiers with the Brewers, and now I'm reading about the days of Mike Fiers with the Astros, throwing no hitters and whatnot. He's the player of the week. Were you keeping track the other night when he was spinning that beauty with the Astros?
Sure, absolutely. Following it throughout the game, and then the really neat experience for his former teammates was they beat the Nationals that night, and they come into the clubhouse, and they watch the final inning of Fiers' no-hitter, everybody in uniform still, hanging on every pitch, and we were still outside. They had not yet opened the clubhouse to media. And when he got that final out, it was just a huge roar from inside the clubhouse. Those guys, I think did it along with him and enjoyed it along with Mike Fiers a little bit. You know, there's no hard feelings when you're in a game like this and you're teammates with somebody for as long as Mike Fiers was teammates with these guys. It's all joy that you feel for him, even if it happens for another organization. And in particular for Fiers, because his backstory is tremendous. 22nd round draft pick out of a small college in Florida, almost unscouted, unheralded, fights his way up to the big leagues, has great success, then has really the year from hell where he starts in the big leagues, is hit hard, sent down to the minors, takes a line drive off his pitching arm on his birthday and suffers a broken arm. And then, worst of all, he loses his mother who'd been battling illness for a long time. Really just a year that could have broken a lot of players. That was in 2013 for Mike Fiers. But he again fought his way back to the big leagues. He was solid for the Brewers down the stretch last year. He was solid for them on a bad team at the start of this year. and drew some interest. And you know, the Brewers did not want to trade him, Dave. He's 30 years old, but he's still entering. You know, he's not yet in his arbitration season, so he's a guy who's club controlled, and in many ways the sort of player the Brewers sort of want to build around as they move forward. But in order to get the center fielder Brett Phillips in that deal, they had to include Mike Fiers. And if you look at all the players the Brewers got in their trades, they made another one now with Neil Kott. So it's up to five trades now, traded away six big league players off Milwaukee's roster. But the top guy they got back looks like Brett Phillips. So in order to make that deal, you have to part with Mike Fiers. They feel like they have some other young pitching that they like, and that was actually, lo and behold, an area of a little bit of depth, and that's why they went ahead and made that deal.
Well, you know, that's part of the deal. You know, sometimes you got to give a little to get a little. Now, one of the other guys that the Brewers got in that deal was Domingo Santana, who's been one of those guys who's kind of moved around over the years, a big Phillies prospect, traded to the Astros in the Hunter Pence deal. Now a Brewer, and he's up. He's going to get a little time. Apparently, what, in center field? What is the plan? What is going on in that outfield right now in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, no, they traded away their center fielders, two gold glovers, in Carlos Gomez and Gerardo Parra. There isn't an obvious player to plug in there, so they've been using two guys. Shane Peterson, who's interesting in his own right, a former first baseman growing up, who changed to the corner outfield spots after getting into pro ball. And now Domingo Santana, who's called up Friday and starts in center field. I mean, this is temporary. He is a corner outfielder for sure, probably a right fielder with the arm strength that he's got. But they're using him in center because they want to see what he can do with the bat. And so far, it's been pretty impressive. He's a power prospect, which, as we know in the game, is so highly valued right now. And the question is going to be for him moving forward, can he make enough contact to be a good big league hitter? He's done that since the trade. His numbers in AAA were excellent. And now he did it in AAA Colorado Springs, a great place to hit. Now let's see what he can do in the big league. And homered in his first game, the night that Mike Fiers threw that no-hitter. And a really interesting guy. And you know, it sort of backs up, Dave, what we said a couple of weeks ago, that these trades sort of backed up the idea that Doug Melvin and the current Brewers front office believes that this is not a five-year rebuild, that this can be a short-term infusion of talent, and they can get back to contending more quickly. And I think the fact that Domingo Santana, one of the guys they picked up in these trades, is already in the big leagues, it kind of backs that idea up.
Oh, Mark, where do we start this week? I feel like we've been here before, but it's nine in a row now that this team has dropped something like 15 of their last 18. It's not pretty. What's going on. And then you can throw in, you know, the Billy Hamilton, Marlon Byrd being traded. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, right now they're just trying to avoid the season longest losing streak, which would be if they lose one more on Monday night in Detroit. So they're trying to avoid a 10-game losing streak. Now they've lost nine twice this season. That's hard to do. And right now they're in last place. They haven't been in last place this late in the season for several years, I think going back to 2008. So they're just really trying to avoid a lot of infamous type of numbers and trying to find a way to get right and finish these last 5-6 weeks on a somewhat of a high note if they can. There's just really not much really good happening right now.
Yeah, honest to goodness, Mark, I didn't remember. I don't know how I already forgot this. This is a Reds team, and this is just going to be a little bit silly, but it's a Reds team that led this division by 2.5 games at one point this year. Right, it started to
a long time ago, Dave. Yeah, but things have changed a lot. Obviously, the Cardinals, Cubs, Pirates are the best in the National League, and they're all in one division, and it didn't take very long for them to leave the Reds in the dust. And now the Reds have a tough schedule ahead. They really don't play a lot of sub-500 teams the rest of the way, except for the Brewers. They got, I think, three series left with the Brewers. But other than that, they're going to be playing some good teams, and they'll have a chance to, I guess, in a way, influence the races. But that's going to be tough on their record. They're going to be really struggling to get things together. They have an all-rookie rotation from here until the end of the season. They have a couple guys missing because of injury, and they have a traded veteran. So it's going to be very tough.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked a lot pre-trade deadline and then right after the trade deadline about the moves this team made and the fact that they're, you know, they're shooting again for 2017. That's the year. We'll, you know, we're hoping that the Reds are back in the mix again. And so as a result, it's kind of a halfway situation, right? And these to me are the dangerous ones because you didn't just fully blow it up and rebuild. You didn't stockpile and just decide to head down the heck with it. We're going to go for it. We're somewhere in the middle. And when it starts to really unravel as it has this last week plus, my concern is, you know, as a fan, what's the effect or the collateral effect on the guys who are still in the clubhouse, the guys who are still supposed to be the core of this team? It cannot be easy for the Vados and the Todd Fraziers, et cetera.
It's not easy, but the best they can do, and Joey Votto has said this on a couple occasions, that he owes it to the employer, in this case the Reds, to do the best effort he can every day. And he's actually one of the guys that's hitting very well during this real rough stretch. He's doing fine. Todd Frazier has struggled for most of the second half, except for a couple of games here and there. Jay Bruce, his production's MIA. He's hitting close to the last 3 or 4 weeks, so it's not good. The only good thing is that can be said is that people that didn't normally get to play are getting a chance to be seen, or guys that weren't around last year, like Anthony DeSclafani is having a fine year. Eugenio Suarez has taken full advantage of the opportunity presented to him by the injury to Zach Cozart to really show that he belongs here. And that's what the rest of the season's about, is to seeing what they have for next year, for guys that are individuals that are going to be back next year to establish good quality numbers to build off of for next year. And that's what this is about right now. This is about finishing strong, not mailing it in, and not kicking the ball around, and just doing a solid job.
Was there much of a reaction to the Marlon Byrd deal? I mean, here's a guy, we've talked about him a lot. I mean, it just didn't happen, right? And I kept thinking, oh, well, he'll find it. He'll get back on track. It just never really happened for him. Did fans, I don't suppose they got that attached to him.
No, there was no real verklempness, I guess, for the lack of a word, or I just made up a word probably. But Johnny Cueto was obviously a trade that shook the fan base a little bit. Marlon Byrd, not so much. But what the Reds did, though, is they moved a veteran that they were going to have to pay a pretty good amount of salary to the rest of the year. Plus, he was flirting with reaching a threshold. He probably wasn't going to reach his option vesting with the plate appearances, but you never know. And they got a reliever with an arm they're pretty happy with, and Steven Johnson. He's a double-A guy. So it's kind of continuing what they've been doing since the winter, which is they've been moving the veterans they no longer can afford or want to afford, and trying to make good trades to get people back. And so far, the deals have really been pretty good. It doesn't show in the results on the overall record, but trading Latos and Simon in the winter, getting Suarez and DeSclafani, and then the guys they traded for Cueto, John Lamb has been pretty impressive so far, and there's hope for the other two guys to be pretty strong. And they got the Giants' number one prospect for Leak, and now they got this Steven Johnson dude from the Giants as well. So this is what these deals bring, and they're hoping they can be the building blocks towards 2016, 2017, 2018.
There you go. All the news that is the news this week, MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition.